Welcome back to the film experience. Murtada is on at Sundance, seeing cramming movies into his eyeballs. So it's just me, Nathaniel, and with our returning guest, Nick Davis.
Everybody.
You have been a busy, busy bee writing up top 100 of the decade. And then we've also got the Oscar race. So there's just so much.
Who can choose?
But first things first, I want anybody reading to go click on your site and read your top 100 because it's really amazing. So many long essays on these movies. But when you were writing them, did you ever think it was going to turn out as personal as it did?
Not, I wasn't expecting to sort of, it was always going to feel personal because whenever we talk about the movies, even like this, we're crazy people, so it's totally personal to us.
Right.
As much as it's like, I think when I was younger, I'd be like, but no, seriously, these are objectively the best. Like, I understand that these are my favorites, are the ones that I've responded to the most, but yeah, definitely as it went higher and the essays got longer, that was usually because I just feel so much more personal attachment to the movies. Or I guess it's kind of chicken egg. If I like liked them so much and therefore they became important in my life, or they felt like they resonated with something in my life and therefore I liked them more. But
Yeah. I think more people would do well to just admit that to themselves when they're making their pronouncements
and if
of
you,
best.
sorry to be a dick, because the whole point of the project was to be like, the world feels shitty and I'm catching myself feeling kind of down, which is not my usual place. So why not only write about things I love? Because like, I don't owe this to anybody else. Like, nobody's making me write about anything else. I will write only about movies I love. And so the good vibes have been even more than I had hoped. But you do look at so many lists. There have been so many lately and feel like, if you look at your own personality and it turns out that 17 Christopher Nolan movies are your 10 favorite movies and you've seen, and he's only even made like nine, and like of your 100 favorite movies, 98 are in English. Like just so, jump over that 1-inch barrier of subtitles that director Bong was just telling us all about and try something else. So I say that and it sounds patronizing. Maybe it is, but that's weird. I mean, you've been working on a list, right? Even though you haven't posted a feature like this.
I have been working on a list, but now you have totally frightened me away from writing up every entry. Because I have trouble even getting a top 10 list posted with articles. So I'm like, I can't imagine. I mean, you've had a lot of free time because you're on
Had a lot of free
sabbatical at
time,
this.
yeah.
That would be the joy of being a professor, is every once in a while you get time off.
Once every 10 years, here it is. See y'all again in 2030. But even when you were looking and making your list, I'm sure this happens when you make your top 10 list also, which I have not done yet for this past year, but it's weird, right? How you suddenly sit and think like, wait, what if I'm an Atlantics person? Or like you just start understanding new things about movies that like, I think of myself as loving this movie, but every time I hold it up against any of six other ones, I always pick the other one. What does that mean? Like, whatever. So that was the
Yeah.
first way in which it felt personal. Then it got more so.
Well, and I also think that's true of like doing a top 10 list because like, in some way it represents you. So like, you feel like, is this too basic or is this, does this have enough variety or does this
Right.
really the snapshot of how I felt about this movie year?
Right.
So that's always kind of the issues I have around like the bottom of the list in particular. Which is really still the tippity top of what's out there because you obviously love everything in your top 10
And
list.
you've seen so much. Yeah.
Yes.
So like you probably love your 15th favorite movie. Like I feel like the bottom of a list like that is always funny because I think we maybe have talked about this before, but like it'll be like New Year's Eve and I'll look at like the 10 that I think are the 10 and I'm like, "Oh, I'm so glad that like In the Cut is still number 10 because I fucking love that movie and I wanted it to be in my top 10." And then you see something better the next week and you're like, "Okay, well number 9's coming out because In the Cut has to be on this list." And then you see another one and you're like, "Oh, okay, leapfrog, leapfrog." Like, so, and those movies always hold up. Like the ones that like you keep cheating to keep them on still love them 10 years later, and sometimes I look at number 3 and I'm like, I haven't really thought about that much since then. I was like in my top 12, and I was like, oh my god, I gave all of these A minuses. I'm a bitch. Like, what am I?
I'm impossible to please.
Yeah, exactly. God damn. But yeah, you know, you just wind up not caring, which, like, not to blow everybody's mind, but it's also true when you're grading for real, right? That, like, this gal's A minus paper was way more interesting to me than that person I gave an A to. That was a perfect paper, but I might never think about it again, but look what she did. Like, so
yeah,
for all of you obsessing over your GPAs, trust that the letters of recommendation are where it's at, where you're like, she got an A minus, but she was the best student I ever had.
Anyway. I think that's why one of my favorite ratings, and I've given way too many of them over the years, is B minus in movies. Because whenever I look back on past years, I'm like, the B minuses are so much more interesting than the Bs and the B pluses, because they're things I couldn't quite with, but I respected them in some way, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't want to give them a C, but I also didn't love them. And some of those last.
So is there a movie for you that, like, just one that comes to mind, that if you thought about the decade, you think you probably love a lot more, or it's a lot more important to you than all of us who read you even realize? Like, that we'll all be surprised to see that it might even be high for you?
I will say, just glancing at my list so far, I'm going to say something that's higher that I don't recall writing much about.
Uh-huh.
Because some of the really high ones in my top 100 of the decade, I'm like, oh yeah, I've talked about that a lot. Or, like, people know I'm obsessed with that. Sure. I would say the one that is pretty high up, like not top 10 or anything, that I don't know if I ever talk about on the site because somebody else reviewed it, is Frances Ha.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which I just have lots of feelings about.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of where I fell hard for Greta and never stopped loving her. So that's one that's, I think, higher than people would be expecting.
Okay.
And also, people who've been paying attention might understand why poetry is pretty high, the Korean
movies. Oh, yeah.
But again, it's not something that's a frequent topic of conversation, for example. You know.
Those are often the surprises, right? Because, like, even, like, I knew, while I was watching Arabian Nights, like 20 minutes into it, I remember being like, oh, this is going to be my favorite movie of the whole decade. And, like, it totally was. But, you know, not that many people, especially outside, like, and I was in a whole row of people that we love a lot, like, because you didn't come till the second one. But, like, Amir was there and Yasin was there. And I think Alex Heaney was somewhere in the theater. And so I've talked about it with those people so much. But it's not like people out here on the street are like, ooh, that 6.5-hour Portuguese movie, did you love it? I did. Like, so if it doesn't come up a lot, people won't really necessarily know. But
yeah. And so for people who haven't clicked on your site, that is your number one.
That's
of
right.
The decade. And your write-ups got progressively longer.
They did. I know. I feel sort of bad for, like, the Starlet people now, because, like, I only wrote 400 words. Jesus. Like, but it's better than the opposite, right? Of, like, skimping on the top ones and writing it in reverse. And then by number 100, I'm like, here's a book.
Well, I will say, I will thank you for Starlet, because you were the reason I discovered it. So you were the reason that, I mean, I can't remember how high up it was on my list that year. I think it was just outside my top 10, maybe. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I really, really love that movie. And that, you know, got me onto Sean Baker, who, of course, made even things I even love even more after that.
Yeah.
And Tangerine and the Florida Project. So, yeah.
That's still, of course, one of my favorite things about doing this, and I'm sure you get this all the time, of, like, people saying that. Like, I had never heard of this movie until you liked it, or I went to see it because you gave it a good review, and Derek always thinks that I'll be used to people saying that, and, like, I'm surprised every time. Like, I can't believe anybody listens to this palaver that I'm putting out, and it's just great.
Yeah, I love it when I get that, too, and I have had people tell me that, specifically about the Film Bitch Awards is what I get that the most about, where they look at past film bits towards for ideas for rentals and things.
Yeah.
Because I honor so many different movies from each year within those awards. Because I am not like the Academy. I don't just pick four movies and give them
every
nomination.
We were both thinking it. Yeah.
So, because I just, you know, I just started doing the Film Bitch Awards, and I've done, I've posted, like, I think five categories so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep track as I'm doing it about how many movies are mentioned.
Uh-huh.
But I come up with a list before I count, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not specifically like, oh, I've already nominated that for something. It's not eligible in this category. It's not the way I think, you know? But I am really proud to say that I do have very wide-ranging nominees once I do this. Because I really think per category, which is why I get frustrated with the Oscars, because I feel like they're always voting on Best Picture, no matter what they're voting on.
Yeah.
So, like, I've only announced 6 of my 40 categories, and already 26 films have been nominated.
Wow. Out of, like, 30 spots.
Yeah, so far.
Wow. That's incredible.
I mean, I haven't got to the big categories yet, but still.
Yeah.
I mean, there will be some movies that have a lot of nominations once it really gets going. But I just was like, oh, wow, because I counted after I had already made, I'd already chosen the nominees.
So how much do you think that the crazy, unprecedented 4 movies getting double digits of nominations is about the accelerated balloting period and that those were the movies that people watched? Or how much do you think it's about, even in a year that had a normal schedule, this has not felt like a year that had a real consensus frontrunner, but all 4 of those have had really strong constituencies for different reasons, and it might have just happened that way.
I've been thinking about this a lot too much. I do think the accelerated schedule didn't help, but I don't really think it would have been much different with a longer, like, add 2 weeks, and I still think you would have had a year dominated by those 4 movies.
Yeah.
You might have had one more errant nomination here and there, you know, like maybe a couple more weeks of momentum and Song Kang-ho would be nominated or something for supporting actor. You know, like there's a couple things here and there that I think might have happened if they had had a little more time. But for the most part, I think it was just going to be this way. And also, you know, as I am wont to do, I like to blame the critics. Yeah. I do think the sameness, even if it's not intentional, the sameness from, you know, all 40 groups or whatever, does sort of, for the Academy that's not really listening, but it's in the ether, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're looking to Critics Awards for what they should do, but it's in the atmosphere. I do think it sort of narrows. I don't think critics should be in the business of narrowing a field, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that's what's happened, perhaps not intentionally, but that is what's happened. I think they should be trying to expand the Academy's, like, point of view.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is when they all agree, it just makes things, oh, I only need to see these 5 movies. You know? It's just something that I'm not happy about, that particular thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm also not, like, I'm having a good year, I should say, when it comes to the Oscars, because I really am so happy for Parasite.
Uh-huh.
Because it's really, if you think about it, it's really kind of a miracle it's done as well as it's done.
Oh, my God. Even if you barely think about it.
Yeah.
If you give it 2 seconds of thought, that's a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm also,
like, how jacked South Korea has been, although, okay, I felt the same way when A Separation finally got nominated.
Yeah.
Iranian cinema had mattered so much to me for such a long time and had never, ever gotten anything at all. And then it does seem like it takes this sort of, like, tidal wave movie to...
So that's sort of kept me afloat through all other disappointments. And the Antonio Banderas run has been so happy for me that I can sort of live with the standard disappointments that come up in award season.
Well, I feel like you're a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood fan, and you like Marriage Story, and you like...
It's interesting because we were talking about movies that are higher up than we would imagine they would be when we were talking about Best of the Decade list, but yeah. That happens every year with the top 10 list as well.
Yeah.
Like, for the longest time during this year, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was lower on my list of 2019.
Yeah.
But I just never stopped thinking about it, and it started to feel more and more one of the essential movies of the year to me, and that was not because it kept winning silly supporting actor awards, even though Brad Pitt is clearly a lead. But anyway, I just never stopped thinking about it. And also, it was one of those things, it's not a backlash to backlash so much as like one of those things where you are really trying to engage with like the critical voices around something.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of reviews of it, and the ones that the negative ones, I found myself disagreeing with so much.
Uh-huh.
Not that I wasn't glad to read them, because like a well-written dissent of something I love is, enjoyable sometimes.
Absolutely.
But like the things people didn't like about it were never convincing to me that this is not a good movie.
Uh-huh.
And like, even something as simple that, people decided was super offensive, like the Bruce Lee sequence, didn't bother me because, like, I love Bruce Lee, and I've always been into Asian cinema, and I've seen a lot of things about his life or whatever. And so the idea that he would be portrayed as cocky was not a shock to me, let's just say that. And then everybody was so offended for him, like he wasn't, pretty sure of himself in real life,
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe he, was that way in real life. Anyway, I do think it was very silly that they were evenly matched, though, given that, Bruce Lee was a master. So, I understand why that scene got under people's skins, but to the extent and which parts of it got under people's skins annoyed me a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then I read this.
Can I feel yourself getting defensive about a movie, and that's what teaches you, I must really love this more than I realized. Like,
yes.
That I'm riding this hard.
Yeah, and like the last sequence in the movie, the big violent sequence with the Manson family. I was one of those people who was like, this is really gratuitous and like, this is a little questionable, Well, I was watching it, and I read this really interesting piece, and if I can think of who wrote it, I will include it when we post this. But it was all about, it was written by somebody who had lived through 69. So they were talking about how the Manson family was like this sort of collective nightmare of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was written by a woman, this piece, and it was like a really fascinating piece about how cathartic that ending was.
Hmm.
And about, because of the sort of like loss of innocence and the sort of like destroying of something that felt like it was a beautiful thing. They became so the Manson family became so associated with hippies, right?
Oh, but right, hippies, yeah.
But hippies were very peace and love,
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it was all about all the different ways that the Manson family sort of, like, ruined things that people loved.
Yeah.
And so it felt very cathartic to see it just not turn out the way that it turned out. Anyway, it was a really fascinating piece, and the more I read that, I was like, that's interesting. And anyway, I saw the movie a second time and liked it much more the second time. So, spoiler alert, it is on my top 10, which I'm posting in a day or two. But I didn't, I will just say in the summer, I did not think it was going to be in my top 10 list. I did not love it that much.
That's definitely the movie of all the movies out this year that I've heard that the most often. That the more people watched it or the more they just sat with it. And I haven't seen it since the day it opened, so I've been curious to, I think it's actually back in a theater in Chicago right now, and I might try to go see it there again.
Mm-hmm.
But I am curious, because I haven't really stopped thinking about it either, even though I think when I saw it, I remembered that I had absolutely no idea how it was going to end.
Yeah.
I thought I knew, and I was wrong. But it had been presented to me as, you'll really think this movie is great, and then you'll either be okay with the ending, or it'll sink the whole rest of it for you when you get there. And I just was like up and down and up and down and up and down and interested and not interested the entire time, including through the ending, which I feel both mixed that it's kind of gross and puerile, but also really interesting for some of the reasons that you're saying. But you know, some movies like that, when you're so mixed, like they just sort of trail off for you. And that one, I keep feeling compelled that I want to go try it again, especially now that I know where we're headed. So it's the opposite for me of like a 1917 or a Ford Ferrari, where I'm like, I just don't care. Even though I don't like them that much less, but I feel like I got it. Whereas Hollywood, and even a little bit Joker, which I actually kind of like Joker, are the ones that I'm just curious what they'd be like. And Marriage Story, which I don't like, I am nonetheless curious to try a second time just to see.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when people don't like Marriage Story, and Marriage Story also feels like a movie to me, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that sort of works as a sort of Rorschach test.
Yeah.
When people are watching it, they have such strong reactions, and sometimes when you hear someone's reaction, you're like, wait, you know, it's that whole like cliche of, did you watch the same movie as me?
Yeah.
There are movies like that where just people just react to them in very personal ways, and sometimes you just do not understand where someone else is coming from if they like or love something, you know?
Yeah.
So since we're talking about the Oscars and
amazingly,
well, it's coming up so soon.
It is.
What do you think is? What are you going to take away from this season besides, like, this miraculous run for Parasite? Like, what do you think about the most in terms of this season, in terms of the Oscars?
I guess when I'm feeling most on brand, I'm still sort of melancholy about feeling like both of the actress and supporting actress race had so many ways to be richer than they wound up being, and they would not have required so much identity transformation to just 5 degrees left, you know, like right here. Or, I mean, I guess something like Lupita like did involve a bigger stretch, but like, I just thought like, after Get Out did so well, but also, you know, like Rosamund Pike was somebody who in a year I think of is really similar to this one in terms of actress and supporting actress feeling kind of flat. Like everybody who thought she might have a struggle because Gone Girl is not really an Oscar movie, I thought like, well, right. Us, you know, like this is not that hard. Like you guys have done this before. And
it's true. Yeah.
So even though it's, on the one hand, I want to say I found, like many of us, Bombshell to be a frustrating and incoherent movie, but I did think Charlize Theron was doing a little more than just imitating Megyn Kelly, and I think Judy is kind of terrible as a film, but I think that Renee Zellweger is actually quite interesting to watch and doing something that's not just about imitating. So I feel a little bit defensive of these fields, even at the same time as I think, how do we not get to be talking about Alfre Woodard? This is so stupid. Or, or where's Lupita? Or, you know, just where are people? So there's that, but that's predictable. I am really surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be, that 1917 has turned into such a juggernaut. I really thought that would be kind of in the lane of something that maybe came out at the exact right time to make a strong first impression because it was different, but is that really anybody's favorite? Like,
yeah.
So I'm kind of amazed that the public response has been so vehement and that the awards traction has been so strong. So if that wins, which I guess is seeming Likely.
But don't you think one of the reasons that people have responded so positively to it is it's so apolitical?
Yeah, I think that is part of it, for sure. Yeah.
Because a lot of the other movies do not have that quality.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it also, it stages war as mostly about what you're willing to do for your family.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is what war's really about, you know, in lion's share of people's experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does feel kind of rigged in a lot of those ways. And I do appreciate, like, I mean, there's such different movies, but I feel like a version of what I felt with The Shape of Water, which was, like, I think a lot of people in the industry wish they could try something freaky and difficult and that they would just give them the fucking money to try it and see how it goes. And whether or not, I mean, I realize I need to take more seriously. There are a lot of people who just love these movies. Mm-hmm. But I also think there are folks who are like, man, when we made Midway, they wouldn't let us do shit. Like, this is the kind of thing I thought we were making when we were getting together on that one. Or
yeah, yeah.
Like, the prize it's getting the picture and director together, rather than there having been some consensus formed about let's give director over here and picture over here.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's become more the norm, which I like. I know people complain about it, but I like it. I always wanted it to be that way in the many, many decades that it wasn't that way.
When we were like, Richard Attenborough, okay. Like, okay. Yeah, and I should let you answer this soon, but I to be as positive as possible, I think the documentary race is not only so completely phenomenal, but such a great story of a branch that got its shit together and like changed the way that it does things in ways that, you know, not every year is this great, but there's so much to be said for people who figure out what they need to be doing to elevate such fantastic work. And the fact that you can see them all right now at home, every single one of them, if you want to, is rare. What about you? What are your takeaways?
I guess I'm still trying to wrap my head around Jojo Rabbit. I'm not a hater of it, and I thought people who were offended by it were not really being honest with themselves about what genre films are and what certain genres are going for. Like, you know, even if you don't think it's a good satire, it's still a satire. Please don't treat it like it's not, you know, that sort of thing. So, but I guess I just don't understand anybody like loving it, or I guess that's my thing. I don't really understand people loving it or hating it. So to have it be like a divisive movie and one that's like a lot of people's favorite is confusing to me.
Yeah.
So whereas something with like Joker, which is also polarizing, I totally get why people love it. I just don't think it's good.
Uh-huh.
You know. And yeah. But I do think overall I think it's an interesting year. Like even things that I didn't really respond to personally, I get why, for the most part, you know, why people did.
Like the Irishman, yeah.
Yes. Like the Irishman, like, you know, it's a solid movie. For me, it's a solid drama, like, right down the middle. Like, and the acting's very good. So, like, I don't quite understand the enthusiasm, but I get it at the same time, you know. But I do think overall, I think there's a lot of interest, a lot of good range, which is why it's so disappointing that the nominations were so heavy for the best pictures, because in some ways there were a lot of ways, like you were saying, just a tiny tweak here and there, and it would have been a good Oscar year.
Yeah.
And also, I'm just very upset with the costume designers.
Oh, I haven't even thought about that category much, but they're all best picture nominees, right?
They really are, which I believe is the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah.
Oh. And it's just really, like, again, the shortened season, which is what people are blaming it on. But also, like, doesn't anybody in Hollywood see movies until they get their screeners? Like,
yeah.
I was under the impression, you know, people always talk about, oh, like, oh, you know, they're busy, they don't see movies. I'm like, that's their industry. I was always under the impression that people in Hollywood went to movies, even if only at a business level. Like, yeah. You go to see what your peers are doing, or you might work with this person, so you're going to go to their latest movie and see what it's like. Like, or you show up at a premiere because someone invited you. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I was under the impression that people within Hollywood went to movies fairly regularly. So it's always hilarious to me. People are like, they don't have time to watch movies. What are you expecting from them? And I'm like, but that's their entire industry. So I've never really understood that critique of the critiques of the Oscars.
Yeah. What would I know? Like, let's just be clear. What would I know? Okay. But it does seem like there are people who have 16 and 18 hour days for hopefully longish stretches of time. And then in between those things are maybe cramming a lot in, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And then maybe like you are about to work with this person, or she is about to be the designer of the sets on the movie you're about to do next, or, you know, whatever. So then you watch a bunch of what that person did. Like, whenever I look at, you know, I don't know if he did it this year. Did Steven Soderbergh put out his, like, viewing log? That's somebody who I think of as, like, probably top bracket, Catholically interested in what the whole industry is doing, like, mm-hmm. interested in international features, interested in all the things Hollywood could be. And he sees, like, a fair bit, but you do see that, like, I'm trying to work on this script for whatever, Logan Lucky, so I've just watched, like, 12... heist movies, you know, and then I'm so fascinated by how George Miller directed those Mad Max sequences, so I saw it 4 times, you know. But it's not like he's not doing what we're doing, you know, or like,
yeah that's true.
Yeah, but and even with the costume design thing, just to bring it back to that, like, I do find it like sort of tedious that they're all Best Picture nominees, but outside of JoJo, I'm not sure I would take anybody's away.
I just think that you have to look at, like, the field.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
Here's an example. Like, The Irishman, right? It's a lot of suits.
Yeah.
And they're good. But I just don't think, and it's a lot of suits and it's time period, but then so is Ford v. Ferrari. And I don't think that's any demonstrably better or worse as a costuming job. You know what I'm saying? So like it's hard to see what they're responding to for me.
Uh-huh.
And then like I think of something like Little Women, they're like, oh, it's period and it's like dresses and things like that. And that always excites costume designers, but you know, so is Harriet.
Yeah.
And even though it's not, like, a Best Picture nominee, I thought the costumes were quite good. You know what I'm saying? So it's like...
Yep.
So it's kind of like, so why did you just pick them because you liked the movie? In which case, you also have that on your ballot. Like, people are always like, oh, it's their... People always use that excuse, but it's their chance to vote on their favorite movie. I'm like, no, they actually get to vote on Best Picture, too. Like, yep. all of these branches get... They're allowed to vote on 2 categories or more if they're in specific branches, but like most branches get to vote on 2 categories, Best Picture and their own branch. So they have a separate, they can put all their favorite movies in Best Picture ballot.
Yeah.
They don't have to vote for them as everything. The best of their field as well. So that's my biggest like frustration with this year. And I don't know if it's because it's a shortened season, but maybe.
I mean,
and it also might be because, like, I know Mark Harris talked about this, it might be just, like, the settling in of this, like, extended, the expanded Best Picture field, because he did that piece a couple years ago, I think, about how there's actually been less movies nominated since that, because people start narrowing down to, like, all of these movies are probably going to be in the Best Picture field.
Yeah.
So then they end up, you know... It narrows the field more than it maybe did when there was 5.
Yeah. That's true. I will brag and say that I was the anonymous source quoted at the top of that article when he wrote it. It says, like, I don't know if you've noticed, but the acting nominees are all coming from the same 10 movies these days. But I also wonder, like, Derek had an opening for a play on Saturday night, and I was sitting next to the lighting designer, and I think it's not a play that necessarily other people are going to go see and think like, oh my God, the lighting of that was fucking amazing. Like, it's not Mary Zimmerman, you know, but right. Because she's the lighting designer, and because I'm sitting next to her, I'm, like, paying all this attention to the lighting. And I sort of wonder if, like, I'm a costume designer, and I'm working my ass off, and the only time I get to watch other people's movies this year, it feels to me, is, like, the 2 weeks I have to vote.
Right.
Do I watch, like, the 10 movies that I've been told I'm supposed to watch for Best Picture, and because I'm so attuned to costume, I see shit in those suits in The Irishman or in what I will call the dinner theater of Jojo Rabbit and see, like, all these little, you know, nuances and accents that other people won't. So I actually do think the costumes were amazing because I haven't, you know, rather than just, like, I don't know. Because I'm struck by, like, when people do their own craft, they tend to see way more things that impress them than I would, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Whereas I used to think that people who do a certain craft like that would be more disposed to see the flaws in everything. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't obviously change the point that, like, you know, would that people were seeing more movies. Like,
Yeah.
Including movies that were apparently banned in Los Angeles, like Hustlers. I guess that's what happened. I don't know.
Yeah, because that would have been a great costume design nominee.
Yeah, or adapted screenplay, or we don't even have to say it out loud. Or, like, things like when you asked us for the features before, like, you know, what's a nomination that really excited you, and I said the Ad Astra sound thing, because it was so, like, that was definitely a case of people going out on a limb for something they were not being asked to go see.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of surprised that, like, the cinematographers rallied behind The Lighthouse, but, like, how does, did the sound people not go to that? Or is it not interesting to them? Like, it's just all mystifying.
It is mystifying. But then we have to remember they are not, they are not like us, like, live to see movies, because they're making them. And I actually, you know, one of the people's favorite things to say to people who write about movies is, like, oh, you're just, or especially critics, is, like, you're just a frustrated, like, filmmaker who you didn't, you know. I actually never wanted to make movies.
Ever. Me either.
And the hilarious thing is there was a time period when I was, like, briefly considering it because I was so into movies. And then I realized, oh, wait, I would not be able to see, like, 100 plus movies a year if I was making one for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then I was like, forget it.
Forget that. Yeah. That's part of why
I would be so bored of that one movie.
That's part of why I decided not to become a therapist, was that I was like, I can't be having somebody having an emergency halfway through the movie. Like, what would I am turning my cell phone off. This is a church. Like, and it's never going to work out. I can't balance those things.
Yes. Yeah. So it's just, it's different lifestyles.
It is.
But I do think that this is one of the reasons why I wish there was something more like Blue Ribbon panels where, or that all categories had some feature that was like the Foreign Films Executive Committee.
Yeah.
Like, that they're not picking the nominees for you, but they're helping. They're sort of gently prodding you to notice something.
Right.
And then sometimes you notice it, and sometimes you don't.
Because I feel like it's your voice that's in my head about, why do we have these bake-offs if they still think these are the 5 visual effects nominees? Like, we told you only have 12 to watch. How did you fuck this up?
Like, like, how did you think Cats had better visual effects than Ad Astra?
For example.
For example,
yeah.
Like, how could you watch a clip reel and come up with that decision?
Yes. Or, like, since I was just rewatching The Tree of Life again for that countdown, it's like, I understand that the dinosaur does not look like it had the full weight of ILM behind it. I get that. You guys nominated Real Steel, and I'm watching a 20-minute montage of the whole galaxy being invented. Like, fuck you. What the fuck, you guys? And, like, that was a Best Picture nominee. Real Steel? Like, so, yeah, it's always going to be mystifying. I'm screaming now on the podcast.
It's kind of like a a weird incongruous thing about my love of Oscars, that they made me so crazy, and yet, at the same time, Oscars are how I fell in, one of the ways I fell in love with movies, and they will always sort of be hand in hand for me.
Yes, of course.
Oscars are how they are, like, there were other reasons I was falling in love with movies, but Oscars were my way into movies before my time.
Yeah.
Principally. And it made me interested in the history of Hollywood, which made me interested in this filmmaker, which made me, and so I really will always love the Oscars for those reasons. Which is, for me, one of the frustrating things about people, Branch is not, it also goes back to this whole conversation, because Branch is not going out a limb for certain artists.
Yeah.
Just like, oh yeah, that movie is getting nominated. Sure, that movie's great at everything.
Yeah.
I was like, but don't you realize that people, historically, there's enough anecdotal evidence to make me believe that my history with movies is not unique. Mm-hmm. I have met so many people who discovered cinema through the Oscars.
Absolutely.
And so, like, if you are never advocating for great work and just sort of settling for what, you know, your neighbor told you that you should watch, like, and watching five movies, that, to me, that's like an abdication of your grand, like, sort of what you can give the world.
Yeah. I am buying every piece of this. No, are you kidding? This is like, I'm the choir, you're preaching.
So, have you been seeing any movies lately, or just rewatching things for your countdown?
I went and saw Midnight Family, which is one of the documentaries that got knocked out after the shortlist.
Yeah.
Did you see that one? It's about Mexico. They say in the beginning of the movie, there's 9 million people who live in Mexico City, and there are 45 ambulances. What the fuck? And that are run by the government as part of the hospital system. So there's, like, this huge industry of people having to have their own private ambulances, because otherwise nobody will ever get to a hospital, or you'll wait for, like, 2 hours before anybody comes for you. So, like, the setup I thought was totally interesting. I thought the movie was fine. And I saw I saw the Matthew Barney movie. I have texted you about that. And and I think I saw, did I see something else? I don't know. I have not been going. Oh, I meant to go see Invisible Life, and then I skipped it to come home and write about Terrence Malick. I'm sorry. And then I wrote to Amazon to try to pick myself up with a list, with a link, and I'm nobody to them, so I haven't heard anything back.
I have been still cramming in movies. I finally convinced myself to stop, but I do this every year until I really start doing the film bitch awards, where I just keep cramming things in. So the last thing I watched, and I'm finally like, I'm done. I've got to get these lists out, was Her Smell.
Oh,
so that was the thing I finally saw. And I think that I want to share this with everyone, because, you know, we've complained and complained about how Oscars aren't looking at these great performances like Elizabeth Moss and Alfre Woodard and all these other people. And I will say this about those two performances in general, is I'm not sure that it wasn't a heavy lift, even if they had better campaigns.
Yeah. That one.
Which I don't think people are really taking into account when they complain. Like Clemency, for example. Yes, Alfred's great in it, but it's also a very tough sit, and it's very, very dry and very depressing without the kind of, like, electric charge that you can get from some depressing dramas. Like, it's very sort of, I don't want to say sedate, but it's not.
You probably definitely don't want to say sedate in that context. Yes. Mm-hmm.
No, I can't see it being a movie where anybody would want to see it a second time.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So even if she had had a better campaign, I mean, if she had had a better campaign, she might have been nominated just on the strength of her history.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that happen a million times. But I also don't think maybe people have really, you know, because people, and including me, I'm guilty of this myself, get on their high horses about, like, the Academy's not paying attention. When, you know, in reality, some of these things would not, even if they all watched their screeners, they wouldn't nominate them, you know?
I mean, I certainly think that about Her Smell. And I'm not saying that as a way to not agree with you about Clemency. Like, I do understand that this, like, I think you're right, that it's so much about that woman's kind of choked attempt to get somewhere different in her head and all the reasons that she can't let herself, but it's also becoming impossible to resist it. Like, and I clearly there's a version of people who watch screen acting who are like, how is she doing that? You know, but, and then other people that are like, have an arc. Like, I didn't feel like she changed, you know? But Her Smell, like, that just never seemed like it was going to come within a light year to me of this. I mean, like, Abrasive has never been their thing, right?
Well, and also it's very, like, I don't even know how you feel about this movie, but I quite hated it. Even though I did love Elizabeth Moss in it, but I really hated the movie. I just was like wanting, I was constantly wanting to shout back at the movie, like, shape your scenes. Cause this is like, they're just letting things run on and on. And I get the sort of exhaustion of it as I get that that's sort of the point.
Yeah.
But before filmmakers were allowed to just do things like that. People made movies about frustrating characters or impossible situations before now, and they weren't necessarily allowed to go on for 2 hours and 15 minutes doing the same scene over and over again.
I'll ask you one more 2019 question, which may be an Oscar question, but it might not be. But if there's another movie that you feel like you haven't resolved your feelings about that you would put back into the player now to try to test it out again? Like, is there one that is that for you?
Oh, if I had all the time in the world and could rewatch everything?
Yeah, like, what do you feel like, I'm not even sure I've made up my own mind.
I mean, I think I should probably give The Lighthouse another shot. I really really disliked it. And so many people that I respect think it's great. And there are elements of it that I liked, of course, like cinematography, and I loved Robert Pattinson in it. And the sound, as you mentioned. But I just, to me, it was just so indulgent, and I just was annoyed with it the whole time. So, like, that's something that I feel like I should probably give another chance, because also when you see things at festivals and you have reactions that are very different than everybody else's, sometimes think that might be just from exhaustion, just from festival exhaustion. And the other one that I would, if I had a lot of time to rewatch things, the other one I would put in again is The Irishman. But it's so long as is that I, you know, I'm proud of myself for getting through it once, you know? So those are the two.
So not the two popes.
Not the two popes. I have seen the two popes twice, actually.
Oh my God.
It was sort of by accident. That happens to me every year. The year of The Darkest Hour, I saw that three times. Somehow.
Are you kidding me?
I am not. Sometimes
Darkest
it just happens
Hour?
With and oh other God. Movies that I love I only see once. It just sometimes it just happens these weird ways, like you're invited to a screening or a friend wants to see something, or and you just end up seeing something more times than you could ever have imagined that you would see it. And yeah, that happened to me with The Two Popes. Because once was.
I wish it were like that Eleanor Rigby movie, and it was like Francis's two popes, Benedict's two popes. Like then I would understand. And then you might get things like, I'll give one example. Katie Rich was supposed to join us on this podcast, and at the last minute she couldn't. And so that the only good thing about that is that it frees me to just be a dick about the two popes, which I hated so much. But one example of something that I am just mystified about is like. You could, if you wanted, Anthony McCarten, write a scene where Benedict comes to the realization that he doesn't want to be the Pope anymore, has like a thought process that explains that, because that's actually, interestingly, what your movie's about. But there's this time he just shows up and is like, hey, yo, I haven't let on, but I don't want to do this anymore, even though I spent the other 35 minutes begging for it. So peace out. Like, do you want to take over? Like, I couldn't believe the things that that movie had 20 scenes about, the things it never had a scene about, even though I thought that was the goddamn point. I shouldn't say goddamn about the two popes. I will not be watching that again.
Thank you so much for this very circuitous conversation. We covered a lot.
Well, thank you for having me, as always.
And once again, everyone, you'll want to go to Nick's website. Why don't you tell them where you can find that?
So the easier renamed one is nick-davis.com.
And then you can click on his 100 best movies of the decade, and you will discover many films that you've probably never even heard of, which is a great service, because as we were saying, we should be advocating and expanding people's ideas about great movies.
Well, maybe don't click on number one first, because I promise they're not all that long.
You're sort of the opposite of me, because I always like start long-winded, and then I get more and more like, yeah, I'm done talking about this.
Yeah. It's perfect. I love it. Moving on.
That was like the year of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. When it was my number one, I posted my top 10 list, and there was no text on Eternal Sunshine, and everything else had a write-up.
Well, I mean, honestly, what do you even say? You know, A++, perfection, don't change a thing.